Welcome to the Humble Hoof Podcast. My name is Alicia Harlov. This is a podcast for both horse owners and hoof care professionals, offering discussions into various philosophies on the health of the hoof and soundness of your horse. Please check us out on Facebook or at thehumblehoof.com. When I went to the AAEP convention in Denver, Colorado in December 2025, I met Dr. Holly Helbig, who is an equine technical services veterinarian for Zoetis. And during that time, even at AAEP, they were having meetings about the outbreak of EHV1. And it was a pretty nerve-wracking time for a lot of horse owners and equine professionals. I asked Dr. Helbig if she would chat with me about some of the biosecurity measures that we can take as equine professionals and farriers and hoof care providers, as well as horse owners, to try to stop the spread of infectious diseases as we go from barn to barn or work with different horses. Seeing as Dr. Helbig was the official veterinarian for the World Equestrian Center Ohio, the Kentucky Horse Show Series, various FEI competitions for over a decade, and even had her own ambulatory practice, she was a great one to talk to about ways to work with biosecurity in the horse world. So why don't we start, and you can tell us a little bit about your background and your path into equine medicine and work with performance horses.
Sure. My background, I think, is a little bit unique in that, you know, I was the crazy horse girl that most of us, you know, grow up being horse crazy. But my path went into business before I went into equine medicine. And my undergrad degree was, you know, more towards marketing and business. And I spent a little bit of time in the business world, still riding, loving horses. And I was working as an assistant trainer. And one of the people that I was teaching was a veterinarian. And she was like, you can do it. You can go back to school. So I took night class to, you know, get the sciences and applied to vet school and got in. And from there, it's, you know, been a straight path through equine medicine. So it's been awesome. It was great to have a little bit of a unique and different background, I think, to get me started in this career.
Yeah. And I think I was, you know, reading a bit about how you're now focused more on the equine sports medicine and lameness. And I was wondering, you know, what kind of drew you to that focus or how you ended up there?
Yeah. So even as a student at vet school, I was still riding and competing. I was a professional trainer in the hunter jumper world, and I was doing a lot of catch riding really just to help pay the bills while I was in vet school. And then at that point, I had already been spending so much time at the horse shows that the veterinarian that was covering the horse shows just asked me to take over essentially right out of school. And so that's really how I got into it. And when we first started doing that, the horse show in Wilmington, Ohio was only 8 weeks a year. And by the time, you know, I left that position 2 years ago to join Zoetis, but at the time that I left, I was on the road almost 40 weeks a year.
Wow.
So it grew over a 12-year span for sure.
Wow. Yeah. And I mean, you know, looking at the performance world, I know that something that's come up in the last, you know, 2 months or so, and more so, I mean, it's something that we should always be thinking about is biosecurity with the EHV1 outbreak that happened. And I would love to talk a little bit about that, because that's something as a hoof care provider that I want to make sure that I'm also focused on as well, since I'm going to different barns and taking care of horses' feet. And I would love to sort of address that topic in terms of hoof care specifically, but obviously in terms of, you know, horse owners and horses that are traveling, if we can kind of touch on that.
Absolutely. Awesome. We're all parts of biosecurity, right? Whether we farrier, horse owner, veterinarian, we're all part of it, right? We all matter in that situation. So yeah, let's talk about it.
Yeah. So I guess the sort of basics of where we start is, what is biosecurity and what does it mean in day-to-day life?
Sure. So biosecurity, you know, doesn't even just apply to horses. We've all been through COVID at this point. And so we talk a lot about prevention, good hygiene, vaccination. You know, trying to prevent the spread of disease is really biosecurity. And it's all the things that encompass that. I mean, there's lots of different elements and layers to it. But at the end of the day, you know, what we're trying to do essentially is, you know, stop the spread of disease.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's pretty obvious in the sense of like farriers and hoof care providers are going to different barns. But I guess as a veterinarian, what's your take on why it matters to farriers?
Well, you know, I think we don't often think about when we're going from one barn to the next that we are fomites, essentially. We can carry viruses with us. Some viruses that can hang out on water and on objects for up to 14 days. And so it's really important that we are, you know, practicing good hygiene and biosecurity, especially between barns, sometimes even between horses, especially if you see a horse that might not clinically be looking okay. You know, I think we forget that we can carry a lot of viruses on our shoes, on our hands, on our clothing, on our tools, and just being cautious of that and aware can help you practice, you know, better biosecurity.
Yeah. And I guess I'm sort of guilty of the fact that, you know, a lot of the horses that I see are at backyard barns where the owners aren't leaving the property very often. And I don't want to say that that's, you know, I don't want to fall into a trap of that being like a no risk environment. So I would love to hear a bit about, you know, is that something that is only or not only, but more of an issue for horses that are in performance, or what's the risk at smaller barns?
Yeah. So, you know, it's obviously a risk for horses that are performing, right? They're traveling. Stress can lower their immune system. They're being exposed to a lot of different horses and more potential for disease spread. But even the horses, the backyard horses, are just as important, right? So say you have a farrier that was working at another farm or at a horse show and then shows up, you know, makes the last call and stops in at a smaller barn, like there's potential for that farrier to, or veterinarian or horse owner to be something that would potentially spread that disease. So the other thing about some of the smaller barns is sometimes they're not vaccinating as much because they're not traveling. And, you know, there's obviously core vaccines and then there's risk-based vaccines. And what we talk about with risk-based vaccines is really flu and herpes. And most horses that are outperforming and showing, you know, they're getting vaccinated every 6 months, sometimes even more frequently. Sometimes the horses that are, you know, not traveling kind of in a backyard aren't there. A lot of them are unfortunately only getting vaccinated once a year. And that's okay, but they might not be as protected. So it's even more important that we're practicing good biosecurity when we go to those farms.
Yeah. And I guess that sort of makes me want to ask, like, how are some of these things spread? I mean, obviously, we're talking about going from one barn and then you're going to see a horse in another barn. Are a lot of these things spread through like manure that's on our boots? Is it like, you know, we're touching the horse's nose, or, you know, what are the common risks when you're going from barn to barn or horse to horse that you're a carrier, I guess?
You know, the number one way that it's spread is through, you know, nasal secretion, most of the diseases, and or most of the respiratory diseases, obviously. And people don't know this, but when a horse sneezes, it can actually travel up to half of a football field in length. That's how far influenza actually can spread when a horse sneezes. So that's, you know, really the number one way that respiratory diseases are spread, such as influenza and EHV. But we also can carry them on our hands, on any type of fomite, which is any type of object, right, can easily spread a disease. Very easy, just soap and water, quite honestly, will, you know, is doable in order to help prevent the spread of disease. But on our shoes, our hands, the one that always gets me is the nose rag. Like, as a performance horse vet, when I'm up at the in-gate and people have those rags and they're wiping the horse's face and then they wipe, you know, 20 other horses' faces with the same rag, that one always gets me. But, you know, there's a lot of ways. Also water. So we know EHV can actually live in water for up to 14 days. Wow. And so you have a lot of people will stick the hose, you know, into the bucket and just let it run, right? And then they're dabbing it into the next bucket and the next bucket. So there's a lot of different ways that these diseases can be spread through manure. You know, there's other non-respiratory diseases that, you know, can be spread through feces, but I would say mostly it's through our hands, our equipment, our clothing, that has the most potential.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so, I mean, obviously we touched a little bit on the backyard barns, but when people are traveling with their competition horses, what are some steps that they can take as owners? I mean, I know we're talking about farriers for a bit, but as owners, where they can prevent some of this spread or from their horse from contracting a disease?
Sure. So, you know, biosecurity and prevention is really the best method that we have right now. And a lot of that starts with vaccination. Something I try to caution my clients is to make sure you're vaccinating at least 2 weeks before travel to allow that horse to build up an immune system. I think sometimes we feel falsely protected. You vaccinate and then the next day, you know, that horse is protected. It does take about 2 weeks or 14 days to really help to build that immune system and provide more protection for the horse. Other things, understanding that stress can weaken a horse's immune system. And so trying to make the travel as least stressful as possible. We could go into a whole podcast about that, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just being prepared. So bringing your own equipment, bringing clean towels, bringing your own supplies, your own tack. And before you put the horse in the stall, I always try to recommend to make sure that that stall has been sanitized, cleaned, remove any bedding that might be in there and put new fresh bedding in. There's so many little steps that we can take that really can, you know, be good preventative measures.
Yeah. And in terms of vaccines, I mean, how effective are they? Like, is it something like in the human world where, like, with the flu here, it's constantly mutating and then, you know, you're kind of guessing when you're making the vaccine to see what will best protect for the next season? Or is there more of a constant in with like equine flu or I don't know if you can expand on that, how effective those are?
Yeah, so we do know that the vaccines are quite effective. No vaccine is 100% protective, right? You know, you go and get your flu vaccine and you might still get the flu, but the severity, the clinical signs are usually lessened. The number of days that you're clinical are typically less. So vaccinating doesn't give you 100% protection, but we do know that there is definitely heightened protection through vaccination and especially through herd immunity, right? So not just vaccinating the one horse, but having everybody vaccinated is extremely helpful. As far as mutations with strains, you know, because there's so many more humans in the world than there are horses, that mutation is occurring much more rapidly, right, than it would be in horses. So we don't see nearly as much change and mutation. To my knowledge, at least, I'm not the flu expert, but we don't see nearly as much change. And a lot of our vaccines, you know, are made from the 90s and they're still protective of horses. They're being tested. I know the company that I work with tests our vaccine against flu strains every single year that are sent into Gluck in Kentucky, and they are still protective. So a lot of the vaccines for horses are a bit older and we know that they're still working.
Yeah, because I wanted to ask that because I know you mentioned that sometimes it's easy to fall into this like false sense of security. I mean, you were talking about right after getting the vaccine, but, you know, obviously we're talking about biosecurity measures for professionals. So I don't want people to think like, oh, well, these horses are vaccinated. I don't actually need to take any measures to to make sure I'm not spreading anything.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like a both and.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I always make it similar to when you get the flu vaccine, right? A lot of people still get the flu, but they're usually getting it, you know, shorter days, less clinical signs. They're not nearly as sick. So yeah, no vaccine gives you 100% protection, but we do know that it definitely helps to reduce the risk of contracting the disease. And we know that if the horse does contract the disease, that the severity is much less.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, so I know that we've talked a bit about performance horses and, you know, we touched upon maybe those backyard barns, but what are some considerations for horses that don't travel to prevent them from getting sick?
Sure. So, you know, they're just as important as the horses that are traveling and they should be vaccinated every year. There's a list of 5 core vaccines that AAP recommends. Those are Eastern and Western encephalitis, tetanus, rabies, and West Nile virus. So every horse, every year, preferably in the spring, should be vaccinated for those 5 core diseases. And then there's risk-based diseases such as flu, herpes, botulism, strangles. And those you want to discuss with your veterinarian, but most horses are getting at least a flu rhino once a year. So for those horses that are at home, you know, they're still at risk. You know, West Nile is a common one that's transmitted by mosquitoes, right? So they're still at risk, even though they're not traveling to another farm. So it's important that we're vaccinating them. And then right along with vaccination is good hygiene, preventative care, making sure that the environment is good, avoiding animals from getting into their food source, we don't see a lot of rabies cases, but we do know that, you know, it is out there, and unvaccinated horses unfortunately have a very high mortality, like close to 100% if they're unvaccinated. So you never know those backyard horses, if a fox or, you know, rabid animal is close by. So just, you know, trying to do the best that we can with good hygiene, good prevention through vaccination are key even for the backyard horses.
Yeah. And I know that you mentioned the core vaccine is typically the once a year in the spring, especially with those mosquito borne illness, or not born. I don't know if that's the right word. Is that the right word?
Yeah. You got it.
With those mosquito borne illnesses. But when it comes to the ones that you were talking about, the risk, yes, you know, the vaccines that you kind of do based on risk, are those ones, you know, what's the schedule for that? Is that, I guess, how many months are those typically protective for?
Yeah. So, you know, flu and rhino is recommended every 6 months for horses that are traveling or being exposed to horses that are traveling. But most of the other ones are once a year. So strangles, botulism, Potomac horse fever. Although if they're at a super high risk area, sometimes they get vaccinated twice a year. So it really depends on a number of factors. It depends on where your horse is geographically. It depends on what they're being exposed to. It depends on the amount they're traveling. And those are all things that the veterinarian will advise and should advise each owner. So
yeah, that makes sense. And so, I mean, back to sort of, you know, my line of work, I guess, what are some kind of simple steps that farriers can take to improve their biosecurity protocols, like on a day-to-day basis?
Sure. You know, simple things such as washing your hands, making sure your boots are clean, maybe even wiping down some of your tools, being aware, right? So if you feel like you're around a horse that is sick, or horses recently came back from a show where there was a clinically sick horse, you know, just taking extra precautions to keep everything clean. It's very easy to kill most of these viruses that are out there. It just takes one extra step, which we all lived through during COVID, right? Using hand sanitizer, washing your hands, cleaning off the bottom of your boots, trying to not use different tools or rags from one barn to the next, and cleaning them in between is really important.
Yeah. And I guess one thing that during COVID, I mean, before we really understood what was happening, we didn't know how COVID was spreading. And so I was cleaning my tools with whatever, I don't remember what it was, but it was something that was recommended. And I did worry a bit that, you know, is there something that you recommend that might be more effective in what might kill common things that we can spread through possibly our tools? Is there something that's like a standard, like, oh, this is something you can spray on them daily?
There's a ton of different agents out there, right, that are sterilizing agents that can be used. But really, at the end of the day, soap and water is going to kill most of these viruses. Diluted bleach works well. So like 10% bleach mixed with some water in a spray bottle, it works great. Rubbing alcohol, I know a lot of people use. You know, you don't have to spend a lot of money going out to buy some sort of fancy sterilizing, you know, spray. It's quite easy to make at home. And there's nothing super fancy about it, right? It's just taking the time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then having some WD-40 on hand so that everything stays smooth and in movement, I guess, it's always hard when the nippers get wet and you're like, oh, the next day they have some rust in there. But yeah.
that's so true, isn't it?
Yeah, but nothing, I swear, I don't know if it's the right name of it, but PB Blaster, that has saved me so many times with getting my tools back moving. So.
Oh, I don't know what that is. You might have to tell me about it.
Yeah, it's like a WD-40, but it's just like a lubricant. But it I mean, I don't know how it works. It's probably very corrosive. I don't know. But it dissolves rust. It's just like I've had tools that, you know, I found in the back of my truck that I was like, oh, I forgot I had this because I hadn't needed it for a while. And it's you can't even move it. And you spray it on and all of a sudden it's like new.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Where do you get that?
I mean, I just get it at Home Depot, or I mean, I've ordered it on Amazon, too. But yeah, because I know one thing is that people say like, oh, whenever you get your tools wet or if you're cleaning them, I mean, really, soap and water is like something that you would never think to touch on your nippers because it's just going to end up rusted. But if you have something that you can just spray on it after, it's going to be fine. I mean, I'm sure most farriers have like a buffing wheel or something they can use too. But Yeah, that's, I just wanted to throw that in there because I know that some people are going to say like, well, I don't want my tools rusty, you know, so.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I, you know, I don't know a lot of research around or know of a product that doesn't rust the tools, but right. I feel like something would exist out there.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have to look into that too, because, you know, I'll usually spray with whatever, like some, like a rubbing alcohol kind of. And honestly, if you're using your tools enough, it should stay fairly lubricated. But, you know, if we have a weekend off and the next Monday you come back, it's, you know, something that the PB Blaster WD-40 usually can handle, at least in my truck. So that's good.
That's great. That's good to know. I have some tools that are a little rusty, so I might go find that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I guess we've been talking so much about prevention, but I guess what happens if, as a professional or a horse owner, you end up going to a barn where either you find out a horse is sick or you a few days later find out you have been at a barn where a horse has been sick? What are your steps at that point to make sure that your own horses and your client horses are okay and safe?
Sure. And, you know, I didn't really touch on this earlier, but quarantine is also part of biosecurity, right? So any horse that is febrile or suspected of disease, quarantining them right away is really important. They actually, horses typically show clinical signs and can become febrile before nasal shedding occurs in EHV and influenza. So getting them quarantined quite early can be extremely helpful in preventing spread of disease. But, you know, we deal with this a lot. So, you know, say you're at a horse show and you come home and all of your horses are fine, but then you find out a couple days later that maybe a horse became positive for EHV or influenza. You know, what do you do? And the first instinct everybody wants to do is just start testing them, right? Unfortunately, that is not what we recommend. And what we recommend is taking temperatures twice a day, quarantining those horses. Any horses that come home from a horse show technically should be quarantined for 2 weeks, although I know that's very hard to do in most barns. So, you know, just putting them aside, like maybe at the end of the barn, using their own equipment for 2 weeks is advised if you can't quarantine them. But definitely any horse that becomes febrile or shows any clinical signs, quarantining them is extremely important. But it is not, it's actually not advised to go around and start testing all of them. Some of them can be, can actually be positive, but not clinical, especially with EHV. And so that can make it very complicated.
That makes sense. In terms of if they're positive, are they a carrier or is it just like they've had exposure at some point?
They can be shedding dead virus, unfortunately. So the PCR that typically we test on is extremely sensitive, so it can pick up dead virus. And we know that most horses, a very large, like 70 to 80% of horses, have been exposed to EHV and could potentially spread it if it became active. So there are horses that are kind of constantly shedding a dead virus. And so we going around and testing all of them would be not advised. We only test the ones that become febrile.
And I guess this is kind of a silly question, but is if it's a dead virus, they can't actively get sick from it?
If it's a dead virus, they can't get sick. And some horses can be spreading an active virus as well. It is herpes, so it can, you know, come back. It can become active during times of stress, which we think about with travel. So there can be horses spreading active virus as well, but that doesn't always mean that the horse next to it is going to contract it or become sick.
That makes sense. Yeah.
You know, so it's not advised to do PCR testing, but there is a test. It's called StableLab or serum amyloid A that we can use to help detect infection. So serum amyloid A is a protein that's released from the horse's liver, and it's released in reaction to inflammation. But if there's infection current, the SAA is released like 10, 100, 1,000 times higher. So there is this little stall side test. It's really great for equine veterinarians. It just takes a drop of whole blood. It takes about 9 to 10 minutes. And right there, you can tell if the horse has an infection or not. So sometimes we'll use that in different quarantine situations to help decide who to quarantine. If horse owners are anxious, they just came back from that horse show and they were exposed to a horse that potentially was positive. A lot of times we'll run an SAA to help make quarantine decisions, or if that SAA is elevated, you know, watch him a lot closer, be taking temperatures more often. That is something that we can do to help also, you know, prevent disease and monitor these horses.
Yeah. And so when you get that result, is that something that is always infectious? Or, I mean, so, you know, we had a horse here that ended up having anaplasmosis. And I remember they did that test. And obviously anaplasmosis wouldn't be, you know, spread horse to horse just through nasal excretions or whatever. But is that something that will detect any kind of infection?
It does. So it's not specific for what type of infection, right? It just says if the horse has an infection or doesn't. So in anaplasmosis, right, that's, you know, transmitted by a tick. So it's not going to be horse to horse, but veterinarians will use it because they not only want to say, yes, this horse has an infection, but then they'll use it to monitor treatment. So most likely that horse, they started on antibiotics and then maybe came back and reran that SAA, you know, 48 hours later to see if the horse is improving and doing better and on the right type of antibiotics.
Okay.
The other place the people use SAA is, you know, we all have that horse with a snotty nose and, you know, right away the owner wants to have antibiotics. But as veterinarians, we're trying to use antibiotics very judiciously, right? We don't have a lot of antibiotics being produced in the United States. So we don't, you know, we're building a resistance, so we don't want to use them. And so for those cases, those are probably most commonly where SAAs are run to help make that decision if that horse needs antibiotics or not. In most cases, those are environmental things that can be corrected to help, you know, stop nasal discharge or a cough.
Yeah, that makes sense. And when you're talking about not just running to the PCR testing, is that basically just if you have a sick horse that you know has been exposed, or when would you do the PCR testing?
Yeah, so I would do a PCR test if I had a horse that was febrile and showing any type of respiratory clinical signs. And, you know, obviously, if there's recent exposure, that even makes you even more cautious. But really, anytime that I have a horse that's febrile with any type of respiratory signs or potentially neurological signs, I would go ahead and test them, do a PCR. It's a nasal swab.
Okay, yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, yeah. Was there anything else that we didn't address that maybe you wanted to touch on?
No, I think we covered most of it.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I think so too. And okay. I think it's given a lot for people to sort of think about and hopefully take into their own day-to-day practice, either as a horse owner or a hoof care provider or other professional. So I really appreciate you being willing to touch on all that.
Absolutely. More than happy to.
Great.
Sounds great. All right. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Okay, thanks.
Bye. I always say that I'm slightly more hoof obsessed than the average person, and chances are, if you're listening to a hoof care podcast, you are too. So we should probably be friends. Feel free to find me on Facebook or email me at thehumblehoof@gmail.com.